I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. On Monday morning, the FBI raided the office and home of Michael Cohen, President Trump's personal attorney, after getting a search warrant. Later that day, an angry President Trump complained while meeting with national security and military officials at the White House about Syria.
So I just heard that they broke into the office of one of my personal attorneys, good man. And it's a disgraceful situation. It's a total witch hunt. I've been saying it for a long time. I've wanted to keep it down. We've given, I believe, over a million pages worth of documents to the special counsel. They continue to just go forward. And here we are talking about Syria. We're talking about a lot of serious things with the greatest fighting force ever. And I have this witch hunt constantly going on for over 12 months now, and actually much more than that. You could say it was right after I won the nomination it started. And it's a disgrace. It's frankly a real disgrace. It's an attack on our country.
Asked about whether he would fire Special Counsel Robert Mueller, Trump said we'll see what happens. Yesterday, White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders said that Trump believes he has the power to fire Mueller. It should be said the raid was approved not by Mueller, but by the U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York. That's where our guest Mimi Rocha used to work as an assistant U.S. attorney. She's distinguished fellow in criminal justice at Elizabeth Haub School of Law at Pace University and joins us on Radio Times. Mimi, nice to have you with us on the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. It's pretty unusual for the FBI to get a search warrant to go into the office, home, and apparently hotel room of a president's lawyer. What kind of hoops did they have to jump through to get this search warrant?
They had to jump through a lot of hoops. And I really think this is important for people to understand that this is not something that the FBI and the U.S. Attorney's Office, any U.S. Attorney's Office, but I can obviously speak from some personal experience about the Southern District of New York where this one was issued. They do not do this lightly. First of all, to get any search warrant, not just an attorney, but any search warrant of any premises, you have the prosecutor and the FBI agents have to submit a detailed, very detailed affidavit to a federal judge. The affidavit lays out the facts, establishing why they believe there is evidence of possible crimes in these certain locations. So it's not just any crime. They have to specify statutes, specific crimes they think were violated, and how they can tie those locations to those crimes. In other words, why it's likely that there's evidence of those crimes in those locations. So they have a lot of information that goes into these affidavits, and the federal judge reads them very carefully. Now, I will tell you, and the standard for a search warrant is probable cause, which is not reasonable doubt, but it is a greater than probable standard. So it is a high standard to begin with.
Mimi,
now, when we're talking,
Mimi,
yeah.
I appreciate this description.
Sure.
Was there fear that documents would be destroyed? And I ask that because Cohen's attorney, a guy named Stephen Ryan, said there that this was unnecessary. It was inappropriate because the client was cooperating with the government.
Well, that gets to the second part of this, which is, the short answer is there was some concern either that documents were going to be destroyed or that in some way the recipient of a subpoena, if they had gone by a subpoena, would not fully comply with that subpoena. So it doesn't necessarily mean destruction of documents, but when you get a subpoena, you're expected to turn over all responsive documents. And I because of the high threshold for seeking a search warrant against an attorney, and I do want to get back to that in 1 minute because I know I spent a long time
okay.
on the search warrant description, but there's extra precautions when we're talking about a lawyer. Because of that high threshold, I can say with certainty that they didn't just guess that he wasn't going to be compliant with the subpoena. They had some evidence of that already, and that could take the form of that they had some documents. They then subpoenaed documents, some of which might have overlapped with what they already have, and they saw that he wasn't turning them all over. They wouldn't just make the assumption that he wasn't going to turn them over. They would have some real indication of that already. So if I could just go back for 1 minute
sure.
to the extra precautions that are taken when you're talking about getting a search warrant for an attorney's office in particular, before you even seek that search warrant that I talked about from a judge, when you're talking about an attorney's office or home, you need to first go to the Department of Justice to certain supervisory type of units within the Department of Justice to get special approval. And again, you have to lay out for them, why is it that you have to do this by search warrant? Why is there not a less intrusive means that you could use to get this evidence? Now, I don't know the answer to that question sitting here right now about this case, but I know that that is a procedure that is followed and is taken very seriously. It's not just a bureaucratic stamp. They really examine the answers to those questions, and if they think there is some less intrusive means for you to get your evidence, they will make you do that first. So I truly believe it's called exhaustion, and I believe that they exhausted the other alternatives here. And then the judge, when they look at the search warrant, there is a whole section in the application that the judge will now look at that's called the exhaustion section, where you explain to the judge why it is that you couldn't get this evidence by less intrusive means. So that's a lot of detail, I know, but I think it's important for people to understand how this process works and that it isn't just sort of done willy-nilly. It's a really rigorous process and it is not taken lightly.
And I do have a couple of more questions related to all of this. And the president
sure.
raised this, and I think other people have as well. So what happens to attorney-client privilege? And can we say with this raid on the office, I'm sure Michael Cohen has more clients than the president of the United States, how do you protect the kind of privacy that exists for a lot of clients with their attorneys?
Well, so, you know, the attorney-client privilege is sacrosanct to lawyers and to judges. So, again, I hope people keep in mind that that's the framework with which all of this is being looked at. So there are procedures that are put into place. First of all, without having seen the warrant, again, I know from experience that
sure.
even in the application for the warrant, what they're likely to have done is laid out categories of documents or communications that they were seeking that they did not think that would not be privileged, that wouldn't fall under the attorney-client privilege. For example, in order for the attorney-client privilege to apply, you need to have a confidential communication in which a client is actually seeking legal advice.
Mm-hmm.
So just because someone is talking to a lawyer does not mean that it's privileged and falls under the attorney-client privilege. There are many times that people communicate with lawyers where it's really more about business advice or, just solving a problem. Mr. Cohen has been referred to as the fixer for Mr. Trump. Not everything that he did as the fixer is actually in his capacity as a lawyer, and so therefore those types of communications would not necessarily be covered by the privilege. So that's one way in which they, I'm assuming, carved out these types of communications. And remember, they have a lot more facts than we do, so they could be pretty specific in their descriptions of that. And then the second category is communications where even if the attorney-client privilege applied, there's something called the crime-fraud exception. And that means that the attorney and the client were communicating in an attorney-client capacity, but the communications were being used to further a crime or a fraud or cover up a crime. And those types of communications would not be privileged. So they would lay out in this detailed affidavit these categories and where and how they thought they could separate out these types of materials that they're looking for. They would also, I am assuming, go to great lengths to only look for materials related to the specific clients who dealt with Cohen that they're interested in. So not all client files will be seized, but only the ones that are specified in the warrant. It's usually a very detailed list.
And let me jump in here, only because we only have a couple of more minutes left, and
sure.
I have a couple of big questions for you.
Okay.
One is, so what we're looking at is an investigation that seems to be separate from what Robert Mueller is looking into. Do I have that correct?
I'm sorry. Can you repeat that question?
Sure. I mean, it looks like, especially since it came from where your old where you used to work, the U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York, it looks like this is a separate investigation from what Mueller is looking into.
Yes. So I believe, just based on the reporting, what I've read, that what happened here is Mueller came across some evidence in the course of his investigation, which led him to believe that possibly, you know, crimes were being committed, but that it didn't fall within the purview of what his special counsel mandate is. And so instead of holding on to that, you know, some of his critics have said that he has this very expansive view and thinks he can investigate anything having to do with the president. But I think this shows the opposite, that because by subject matter, it doesn't seem on its face necessarily to directly link to Russian interference in the election, he referred it to a U.S. attorney's office. That makes it a separate investigation, but it doesn't mean that they wouldn't coordinate going forward, and that if there is evidence uncovered in this Southern District investigation that's relevant to the special counsel, you know, that could obviously, and I assume would, be turned over to the special counsel.
And we should say that it probably has to do with Stormy Daniels and the Cohen representation of the president and all of that. I'm going to put that on the side. But this whole question about whether the president can fire Robert Mueller, and according to Sarah Huckabee Sanders, he thinks he can. Can he do that, Mimi?
Not under current regulations. I mean, the regulation is very clear. The special counsel regulation is, you know, it's right there in the regulation. It says that only the attorney general, which in this case is the deputy attorney general, acting as the attorney general, can fire the special counsel. So if he were to call up Mr. Mueller and try to fire him, I would expect that Mr. Mueller would not obey that directive, because it's just not within the power as the regulations exist now.
And we're almost out of time here. Can the president, I don't want to get ahead of the story, but can he fire Rosenstein?
That he can do. He can fire Rosenstein. And then my understanding is that based on sort of the line of succession, the Solicitor General, the current Solicitor General, would become the acting Attorney General for this purpose of overseeing the investigation. And then the President could try to nominate, you know, someone of his choosing, but that person would have to be confirmed by the Senate.
And we're almost out of time here. So will this be fought out in the courts going ahead?
I think if he really tries to fire the special counsel, I do think there's likely to be litigation about that, yes. If he fires Rosenstein, I think, you know, that's going to play out, because the purpose of firing Rosenstein would be to get somebody else who would fire Mueller, and I think he's going to have to go pretty far down in the ranks of the Department of Justice to make that happen.
Well, Mimi Rocha, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We'll be talking about something completely different after this very short break.